There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave counsel. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Welcome back, y'all, for the second hour. I'm Cameron Smith, filling in for Sean Sullivan. The first hour, we talked about the Republican debate, and I mentioned optimism, and Marty caught me, and he said, well, if you like optimism so much, why do you write for AL.com with Whitmire and Archibald always telling us why Alabama's so terrible? Well, Marty, I think that's a fair point, but my optimism is not muted by any of my AL.com colleagues. I have very different perspectives from many of them and have for years, and I get it, but I think Reagan's happy warrior, I was a Reagan baby, okay? But this was, as a kid, my dad would talk about Ronald Reagan this, Reagan that, and why he was so great. And I started listening to some of Reagan's old speeches and stuff before I was born. And I love this idea of the happy warrior. I'm always going to love that idea. That just because we feel passionate about individual liberty, limited government, the rule of law, strong families, like those core tenets, we don't need to be jerks about it. We need to be happy. We need to be optimistic. And I think, you know, as a Christian, the anger of man does not work the righteousness of God. We know that. And I see a lot of anger in politics. And it's my job as somebody on the radio, as somebody who writes columns, to say, no, I'm not interested in that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not. And I'm guilty of it from time to time. Sean will tell you guys that. Y'all have heard me on the radio. Sometimes I get loaded for bear and fired up. And I'm having to learn that that anger is what turns everybody off. Okay. Now, the folks that are with you, your core people, they'll stick with you. But if you want to bring people into the political fold, you got to be a happy warrior. You got to be somebody that people look at you and they say, you know, I want to be like that guy. And a big one for a lot of mamas out there is, hey, my son or daughter could look at that person and I would be cool if they were like them. And I get it. The Trump thing, the Trump era, it's different. It's an anomaly. And let's talk about that and where that came from. And then we'll talk Trump strategy this hour. The Trump moment came from people basically just being sick and tired of being dealt life by Washington. It was, Jeff Sessions calls them masters of the universe. I always chuckled when he said that because I always thought of He-Man. But Senator Sessions talked about the control that was exercised by people who were in Washington who felt like they were better than everybody else in the rest of the country, and they were doing us a favor by telling us how we ought to live our lives, what we should think, what we should feel, how we should approach policy, and that we were just idiots who, I mean, they were saving us, right? There were a bunch of masters of the universe in D.C. who had a messiah complex. And Hillary Clinton embodied all of that. And Donald Trump, you know, this is a guy who, strange dude, who comes out of nowhere and says, hey, I'll give it a shot. I'm tired of this crap, too. Okay. And folks gave him a shot, right? Because they wanted something different. And I think that I can get on board with. That is something that connected with me personally because I worked in Washington and I could see that attitude of, hey, I'm here. You know, you got a lot of 20-somethings up there who haven't experienced life at all, who are shaping policy for the rest of us. which is an absolutely loony phenomenon, but it's what happens. I was part of that. And I see that attitude coming from D.C., and I understood Trump's appeal in addressing it. But what's happened is over, since 2016, it's kind of morphed into this, we don't know which way is up, we don't know right from wrong, we don't know truth from a lie. It's just everything is uncertain, we can't trust anything, and there's a lot of anger. And I see anger everywhere. I mean, Democrat side, Republican side, but I'm telling you guys that this is a poison. It will always be a poison. Anger will never bring us together. And I'm not a kumbaya guy. I love hardball politics. Always have. But there's a way to do that in a manner that connects us as Americans. And I don't know about you guys, but I don't go around and look at my neighbors, and when I'm coaching youth football, doing a political litmus test and say, hey, do you like Joe Biden? Because if you do, we can't be friends. We can't do any of this stuff. And I know some of you folks that are listening to my voice have lost family members over politics. You don't feel like you can talk to people about this stuff. And that, to me, is what's insane. That's nuts. Like, and I appreciate y'all who texted in and said, hey, don't worry about Dan. Look, Dan is right. Dan's call was correct. What he's saying is, I'm just so sick and tired. Amen, Dan. I'm with you. And I think that's the problem here is, and I wrote, y'all can look it up on AL.com, but I wrote a column that said basically the Republican field, to the point of the debate last night, has basically been Trump, turncoats, and knockoffs. And what I meant by that was that Trump was the authentic candidate. He's somebody that says, I'm me regardless. Whether you like it or not, I am here and here's who I am. He's not sticking his finger in the air trying to figure out the way the polls are blowing. He just says, this is me. He says what he believes, what he thinks, what he feels, and sometimes what he doesn't. I mean, he doesn't have a problem lying if it's interesting to him. But people see him as authentic. And it's really hard, particularly for Democrats, to see that and say, well, he lies. He does all these mean tweets and stuff that we don't like. Okay, that's fine. But he's consistent. Donald Trump today is the same Donald Trump that we had in 2016, period. The rest of the field is trying to figure out what everybody wants. And imagine a leader shows up. Look, Alabama's a football state. We'll just do it this way. Imagine a quarterback comes into the huddle and says, hey, guys, you know, I see the play clocks going. What kind of plays do y'all think we should run right now? Like, let's just take a brief survey of the running back, the lineman. I know y'all like to run the ball. Let's see what y'all want to do. Well, that huddle's going to look at that quarterback and kick him out and say, give us somebody who's going to call a dang play. And that's where Trump calls the play, man. You don't have to like the play. You don't have to agree with the play, but he'll call a play. The rest of these folks come in and say, well, I don't know. Let's see what's popular. I can't criticize Trump too much, but I got to differentiate. I mean, I've been in the room with the D.C. consultants, and I'm telling you, that's what they're getting told right now. Scott Walker said this the other day, and I thought it was brilliant, that his big mistake when he ran for president was listening to those consultants, because people are looking for a leader. We want a leader so we can go about our days and not worry about, hey, does somebody have my back in Washington? And right now, most politicians, most of the federal delegation in Washington or from Alabama and most states is just sort of like reflecting what they think people want to hear. That's not leadership. That's an opinion poll. And that's what you got. Most of us got. That's the reality. And very few people are willing to take principled, tough stances, not be a jerk about it, but tell you what you want me to say is not what's best for our country and best for you, and we're going to disagree occasionally. That's what leaders do. If somebody agrees with you all the time on everything, you should watch out. I love my wife above all others, but the idea that I agree with her on everything is nuts. For those of you who are married, y'all know that's not true. I mean, so you want good disagreement. You want people to tell you the truth, and in politics, too many of us have these itching ears where we just want to hear what we want to hear, and that's become part of the problem. So I can be sympathetic to Dan and to folks who are just tired of this crap. And I think they're right. I mean, CNN, Fox, this big cable news stuff, like, I don't really listen to that much. Like, I was there for the debate to watch it, but I don't turn on cable news. I don't. I mean, that's just the honest truth. I mean, most of what I get is either from podcast or Twitter or AP articles. I mean, I don't have time for that stuff. So I agree with you guys on the text line that things are changing and they'll continue to change. And I think even in that changing landscape, we've got to deal with what's the case now. How are people getting information? Well, I know there's a heck of a lot of people in Republican world still hooked up to Fox News. They are. And I understand there were so many impressions on X for the recorded interview between Tucker and Trump. I get you. But man, the people that actually tuned in and watched that debate and the people that have Fox News on in the background in a lot of flyover country, there's still a lot of them. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Trump's strategy. I'm Cameron Smith, filling in for Sean Sullivan, and you're listening to Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. I'm Cameron Smith. We're rounding out the hour. Thank you for being with me, and thank you guys for joining on the text line. If you want to join the conversation, 251-343-0106. I think Grant and Dan have made some points that are bear repeating, particularly as it pertains to outlets where people get their information. At 41 years old, I can tell you, I am a terrible partisan. And I think a lot of folks that are in that 20, call it to 50 range, aren't very good partisans either. And I'll tell you why I'm not. Because I'm more I connect more with the Republican ideas of limited government, free markets, individual responsibility, the rule of law, those type of things, right? Those kind of are my core principles. But anytime anyone ever asks me to sign like a slate or a pact or a whatever, I just know. I'm just going to say no, because I don't like the idea that I have to, if I'm going to be in your club, I got to agree with you on everything. That to me is crazy. Like, that's a cult. That is weird. And when I worked at the Alabama Policy Institute years ago for Gary Palmer, I learned a lot with those rubber chicken dinners, whether it was API or the Republican Party or other things like that. And I saw, you know, between that and working on Capitol Hill, well, man, Republicans have a lot of different perspectives. Like, there's a lot of differences between folks even that support the same thing. For example, at the Alabama Policy Institute annual dinner, there would be a broad swath of people there. We'd listen to a speaker, clap, and do that sort of thing. Same with the Republican events. You go eat your rubber chicken, you listen to a speaker, you clap, a lot of sparkles, lots of sequins. But what's happened lately is just kind of weird. This sort of, you must be all in on every issue and be exactly the same, or you're some kind of turncoat. Well, no. I'm going to agree with you where I'm going to agree with you. And guess what? There's a Democrat who has a limited government policy, puts it out there. I'm going to agree with them, too. And it's because I care more about the individual issues than I care about some weird slate or some team sport. I've already got my team. I roll tide. Like, that's real clear. I love that team. And so when that happens and football season's here, guess what? I'm going to support Alabama come hell or high water. I don't feel that way about my politics. I don't, because I think that's weird. And I would ask a lot of you guys, do you really think that's a wise plan to have a – because y'all remember when Trump was president and the Republicans were developing a platform? They said, nah, we'll just – whatever Trump does, that's our platform. Well, that to me is insane. I might agree with him on some issues, but I'm going to disagree on others. The steel tariffs were a terrible idea. I disagreed with him on that. But I loved his judges. So I should be able to do that. And I think more and more younger voters are looking for people that can lead like that and say, agree with me where you agree with me, disagree where you disagree. And this is the secret sauce in Washington. You've got to build these coalitions to be able to move the issue. You want to block grant education and get rid of the Department of Education? Okay, cool. That sounds great. How are we going to build that coalition? So maybe I can convince Katie Britt to do that, and Tommy Tuberville's not so sure. I'm going to go get Terry Sewell and Jerry Carl and maybe Barry Moore, and then I'm going to go get – that's the work, right? That's what it looks like. If you want to do these big things, you got to be able to build coalition. And I think too many Republicans have played this purity game where it's addition by subtraction. It is, well, we can get what we want. We just have to have more people like us, rather than saying, hey, this thing that we want, let's go build a coalition around that. And even people that might disagree with us on abortion, well, maybe they agree with us that what we're doing on education isn't working. That sounds like a game plan. And that's how I think we have to start approaching politics. So Dan and Grant and the things that they're saying make a lot of sense, because younger voters, they're listening to different voices. They don't pick one person and say, you tell me everything and I will follow you to the death. You know, that might have worked in the medieval period, but now it just seems kind of weird. We are very different as Republicans. I mean, some of y'all are listening to me and saying, hey, right on, Cameron, I'm with you, I'm there. Some of y'all are like, freaking Rhino, he's soft, I'm not sure about him. And, you know, some are saying, wow, you're like crazy conservative. So I could have a bunch of different people look at me and come up with radically different responses. And so my take on it is, let's be a bit less personality-based and more issue-based. Like, hey, let's reduce the number of abortions. Okay, how are we going to do that? Well, we need to have this level of education in public schools about, hey, how babies are actually made, and supply folks to make sure, hey, we're being a lot safer, so we reduce the number of pregnancies to begin with. I could get Democrats on that board with that. I know some Republicans will have a hard time, but again, I want to save lives. So that type of thing, it's uncomfortable. I get it, but that's where we need to go, and hopefully some of you guys are willing to go there. Let's turn real quick to some predictions. We've seen the polling data. I use the Real Clear Politics averages to kind of talk about this stuff, because they're sort of a poll of polls, and I see where the numbers are and see what I'm going to predict. So Trump's at 55.4. I'm going to just do the top ones. DeSantis 14.3, Ramaswamy 7.2, Pence 4, Haley 3.2, Scott 3.1. And I'll give you Christie 3.0. Okay? What I see happening after this debate, I do think it's going to take some wind out of Trump's sails, because I think some Trump voters are going to look at this and say, you know, there were some good candidates out there, kind of like Dan saying, I like Ramaswamy more than Trump. But more, I think his lack of presence. People love Trump because they think he's a fighter. They loved watching him toy with Jeb Bush on a debate stage. Him not being there, and frankly, the field doing a good idea ignoring him, I think hurts him. I think Trump's going to drop in the next sort of average. This is 810 to 821. The next one they do, I bet he drops below 50. I think Haley comes up to around 7. And I think Ramaswamy drops back to 5. And I might give a point to Scott. DeSantis, I think, might pick up 1-2. Maybe he's at 15. And I think the rest of the field starts to collapse. I think Burgum, Hutchison, Hurd, and Elder probably need to look elsewhere. But we shall see. Again, after the break, let's talk about what that means for Trump and how he's going to play this going forward. I'm Cameron Smith. You're listening to Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, folks. Last half hour of a wonderful day. Thank you guys for engaging and your feedback on the text line. And I've got some good news. You're going to have to deal with me tomorrow, too. And on Fridays, I've been known to be intolerable. So it should be quite exciting. We can talk about Sean while he's not here and just have a grand old time. Obviously, the GOP debate is the thing. That's what's been driving the news cycle for a hot minute until we get focused back on Trump and potentially get a mugshot and those sort of things. I mean, you got to give Trump some credit here that he is running a much more disciplined campaign than he was in 2016 or even 2020. Or 2020. This feels more like a traditional campaign. I think that may be a problem from him from a strategic standpoint. A couple reasons why. Okay, and the RCP averages we're talking about currently is up 40 points, 41.1 to be exact. So what it tells me is half the party, roughly, has said Trump's the guy. The other half is sort of looking around saying, well, do I have an option other than him? The dynamics that are at play here are kind of wild because he's got these four indictments. And I'm not talking about how you feel about the indictments. They are what they are. They'll work out in the criminal justice system. But it creates some real challenges for him because he's got defense lawyers looking at 91 charges, felony charges against him. And they're basically whispering in his ear. They're probably not whispering. They're probably shouting, hey, man, what you say publicly, what you put on Truth Social, what you record with Tucker Carlson, all this stuff can be used against you. And a lot of these claims outside of the documents case are based on the 2020 election and his state of mind, whether he knew that it was stolen or not, whether he was intentionally lying to people, and not just lying, but taking the charges. And again, these are hard to prove, but all those other charges are basically you took steps to invalidate the lawful results, not just challenging the courts, but you took this step. These are all the conspiracy, the RICO, that kind of stuff. So his attorneys are telling him, no, the less you say, the better off you are. He's also got DC consultants, and these folks, swamp critters. I love them. I know many of them, and they got to make a living too. I get that. But the guidance here is, sir, you're up 40 points. We need you to run your campaign from the basement. These are the same people that advised Joe Biden. They said, nobody can touch you. Nobody's going to touch you. They're not actually hitting you. And the people who are hitting you are Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson, and they're not going to leave a dent. So there's no point. There's no point in you getting out there, exposing yourself. Well, that sounds great. In theory, for a lot of races, that makes sense. The problem is that's exact the authenticity of Trump is what drives him as a candidate. It's what gives him cachet that other folks don't have. And so he had to have been, and don't kid yourself, he was absolutely watching that debate. And he had to be saying, and he's looking at Vivek Ramaswamy and saying, you know, I could have done it better than him. I could have handled these guys so much better. Because that's how he is. At this point, everybody in the country knows who Trump is. They know how he kind of does his stuff. And his consultants will continue to say, unless we see a real deviation, let's just say hypothetically, Trump drops to 40 and the other points are spread around the rest of the field. Well, then his teams are going to start to panic, and then maybe they say, hey, you need to go debate. I think Trump is going to drive himself to debate. I think he's going to say, you know what? I do what I want to do. I always have, and I want to get on that stage, and I want to mix it up. I want to go punch these guys. And I think that is going to be the game changer. I think in the next debate, if the D.C. consultants have their way and if the lawyers have their way, Trump will stay out. I think Trump says, no, I'm coming in. And then we see the battle royale, right? Then we see who's going to go toe-to-toe with him. And frankly, do voters respond to that? Or, like, for example, I can't see Vivek or DeSantis doing anything other than basically agreeing with Trump, right? Of saying, yeah, you know, you were a great president. We really like you and the way you do things. And, you know, we're just different. We're different options. And I think things that they could get away with last night become much harder for them to kind of do when Trump's in the room. Even Mike Pence is going to struggle because what's he going to say? Well, let me tell you about the successes. No, he'll say it like this. Let me tell you about the successes of the Trump-Pence administration. Well, Donald Trump would say, yeah, let me tell you about my successes as president. You rode my coattails. Why would anybody think you were successful? Your claim to fame was you certified the election results. Congratulations. That was the biggest thing you did over my whole administration. So thank you, but what are you doing? I see Christie and Trump. The only thing that I could see happening with Trump in there is Chris Christie has a maniacal desire to go after Donald Trump. We know this. Donald Trump reciprocates that. He just can't stay above it. He just is. He basically wants to call Chris Christie a big fatty. That's absolutely what he wants to do. And so I could see basically the next debate, if Trump's in it, devolving in sort of a chaos machine. Now's the part of the show where I'm going to get out on a limb, and some of y'all are going to not come out here with me. Because I think that Trump is going to essentially put himself on the debate stage, the field will shrink. I don't know whether Burgum stays in. I think Hutchison probably goes. Let's just assume those two are gone. I think Trump comes onto the stage and then does what he did in 2016. And the difference is the 2016 field was not prepared. They had no way to deal with somebody like that because they never encountered it before. Now everybody knows. And I think this thing turns into a battle royale. I mean, just look at Mike Pence's aggressiveness last night. That is uncharacteristic for Pence, but he knows that that's going to be kind of the demand. This was a warm-up act, right? He's not going to be able to sit there silently while Trump dresses him down. He's going to have to be combative. Well, if you have Ramaswamy, Pence, Christie, Trump, all, and throw in DeSantis. You've got five that are just throwing haymakers left and right. I think that creates the window. And I know that a lot of y'all can't go here with me, but it creates a window for Nikki Haley on a couple of fronts. One, I think she did well in this debate, but my wife does not care about politics at all. In fact, she tells me to talk about it so she can go to sleep. So I use her as my sounding board for political stuff for, you know, your average voter. She watched the debate last night with me and she said, hey, I really like Nikki Haley. Tim Scott seemed all right too. And that was her feedback, right? But when I asked her this morning, she said, yeah, I really liked her. She seemed, you know, kind but firm. She talked about a lot of the attributes that were there and said she made sense on abortion policy. Republicans haven't had a great, coherent, consistent message on abortion since the Supreme Court acted. And so I think that if you have a five-way battle royale of everybody hitting everybody and calling them names, Nikki Haley's off to the side over there with Tim Scott hanging out and saying, okay, no, I'm not going to do whatever y'all are doing, but hey, I've got some ideas. Let me talk about that. I think that you could see sort of a spinoff, and everybody talks about, well, maybe Haley's running for vice president, or maybe Tim Scott's running for vice president. Imagine how many Democratic heads would explode if Nikki Haley and Tim Scott were the ticket. Think about that. Not only would they beat Biden handily, but all of the Democratic arguments about, well, they're so diverse, and they are the folks that understand diversity, equity, and inclusion. For Republicans to put up a ticket that was effectively Nikki Haley and Tim Scott, and to win with that, oh man, I think it would turn politics on its head. I get it. You're like, Cameron, it's way too early. You're going nuts here. Fair enough. I'm not going to argue the point with you. I think that that's definitely a stretch prediction, but tell me you don't see that battle royale happening. If Trump gets on that stage, I see at least four, maybe five of them just being out of control, because they've convinced themselves that the only way to make a difference is to fight Trump. And I think that they're right to some degree, because clapping for Trump and cheerleading for Trump when Trump is on the stage is going to seem really weird, because everybody's going to have the obvious question of, why are you running for president if you like the guy who's already been president? So they're going to have to fight. They're going to have to go on the offense. And it was clear from last night, the approach from some of these folks is going to be, I'm going to do the name calling. I'm going to, you know, what has he said? Chrissy said Vivek sounded like ChatGPT. Pence was taking Pence shots. They were sort of weird, but it was very aggressive. So that's what I see. I see that happening. And if y'all can tell me that everybody's going to be calm and let Trump do his thing, and they're just going to ignore him and politely work with the moderators, I think you're nuts. I don't think that that's going to happen. And so I do think that there's a coherent lane, and there are a ton of Republican women. I think it's sometimes the Republican Party messes up here. There are a ton of Republican women who look at a candidate like Nikki Haley, and they see a mama. They see somebody like them. They see a professional in the workforce. They see a lot of identity points that they can connect with. And for her to say, you know what, I hear you on abortion, I'm very pro-life, but like, let's tell people the truth. Let's connect with women. Let's look for ways to reduce abortions. And, you know, let's leave this to the states, because the truth is the votes aren't there in Washington. I'm telling you, I would not sleep on that answer, because I think it really matters. And Democrats are going to make this election about two things. One, Donald Trump. Two, abortion. That's what they're going with, is Republicans are extreme. Donald Trump is a criminal. That's what Joe Biden wants it to be about. He doesn't even have a plan to run against anybody else in the field. It's just, I'm going to run against Donald Trump. And the abortion decision, they know how that polls and in what markets it matters. And in those swing states, it really matters. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap all this up, put a nice bow on it. I'm Cameron Smith, filling in for Sean Sullivan, and you're listening to Midday Mobile.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, y'all. I'm Cameron Smith, filling in for Sean Sullivan. Do me a favor and head over to X or Twitter or whatever it is. Follow me at D Cameron Smith. That's D Cameron Smith. It makes it a lot easier when I can communicate with you guys regularly, and y'all can tell me why I'm wrong and what I missed. 5114 on the text line said, my wife is the reason why women shouldn't vote. And I want to just, one, you can tell her that. And two, you're the reason why we struggle with suburban women. I mean, good grief. I was in a leadership retreat working in Congress when Jared Kushner came in and basically gave us the campaign information and said, hey, we're just really sucking wind with suburban women. Pay attention to suburban women. Do it. Because they matter so deeply in swing states, and they pay attention. And they're looking at, hey, what's the impact on me? But the bigger question is, what's the impact on my family? They're paying a lot of attention on issues related to, one, abortion, but also education. Who do you think's driving a lot of the discussion at the local level about what's in schools and what's not? It's a lot of suburban moms. So don't sleep on this for a minute. And, you know, Dan was asking me, why can't you like someone and also think you can do way better? That's fine. You can do that. But I think right now we're sort of in a political malaise period. And I've said this, don't have to agree with me, but the challenge facing Trump is with those swing voters in the general election. Do I think he necessarily has any problem being a juggernaut through the primary? No. Do I think that if he's convicted of any of these things and he's in a general, that he's toast? Absolutely. I just don't think that voters are going to come and say, in spite of a conviction, in spite of these indictments, I'm going to swing over into your column from Joe Biden's in 2020. I just don't. And I'm telling you, I am Joe Biden's biggest critic. He is barely there. It is weekend at Bernie's. And I'm sorry, I respect the office of president, but frankly, I respect it more than having somebody in there that's that old and with that little functionality. And I'm telling y'all, I've written about it, and I understand some of y'all say it's ageist, but when we're talking about folks that are above the American life expectancy, that's where I tap out. I mean, the idea that I'm going to have somebody leading our country who, whether it's Trump or whether it's Biden, is most likely not going to be there to deal with the effects of their own policies. Most of the decisions in D.C. are based on a 10-year budget window. So the idea that they're going to pass legislation, they're going to sign it into law, they're going to do things that will affect the future, but they're not really, in all likelihood, going to be there just from natural causes. That matters to me. And I'm not saying that, you know, the elderly shouldn't participate in politics. I think we just need to be mindful of our future. And so as somebody with a young family, I want people with families in office. I supported Katie Britt largely for that reason, because I wanted somebody that I could look at their family, see my family, and say, hey, you know what? I can see that person as representing me well. And so I got behind her candidacy. I mean, I early, even before it was a thing, because I like that. And I think we need to find more young people like that in across all the offices. And I understand for some people that's not, well, you need to wait your turn, you need to have your experience. Well, yeah, there's some truth to that. But I'm over this wait your turn for the keys to the car. That's a Southern thing that needs to be dispensed with. You need to wait. You need to get some experience, but you don't need to be 65. You don't need to wait that long before you get a shot. And I think that we need to start looking at younger candidates. Frankly, there are a lot of talented people in the South. There's a lot of talented people in Alabama who deserve a look-see for public office, and they need to be encouraged. And so, yes, I know I was hard on Vivek. He is a younger candidate, but I think that we have to have some new energy into the political space, because when you have people like Joe Biden and Dianne Feinstein up there that are not all there, you've got a huge problem, and you're going to pay for it in the long run. And unfortunately, we are. And I don't want to see any more stumbling, bumbling. And so I've made a rule of thumb for myself that if a candidate is over the American life expectancy for their respective gender, then I'm out. I'm not interested. I'm not gonna vote for him. And that's it. I don't care if I really like him. I just think that's a principle that I'm going to stick with, because there should be a lot better options. And if there's not, that's on us, because we're not going and finding those people. And so tell me that I'm wrong. Tell me that I'm not being fair. But for me, I think that's the type of thing where, hey, let me see some youth in politics. You know, I want them to have experience, but somebody that's run a company, somebody that's, you know, been in the workforce, somebody that's served at different levels, like, give me that. And if we get that, I think we can be really successful. I'll tell you what, I really appreciate you folks today. Your engagement and back and forth has been great. Please, please, please come join me tomorrow. I'm Cameron Smith. I'm filling in for Sean Sullivan, and you have listened to Midday Mobile.